KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, finding ways to market movies to targeted audiences, whether in gay nightclubs or Christian churches. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And John, as we are speaking, the news is still being unraveled about this terrible shooting in Colorado at the midnight screening, the premiere of The Dark Knight. And there is just going to be a lot of hand-wringing and thinking about everything from theater security to the cultural climate to gun control. This is going to be one of those moments that stands out, I think, for a long time to come.
No, and I think it goes really to the heart of the contract of movie going, which is that when you enter the theater, you leave your worries behind, you escape. And that fundamental contract, I would say, has been shattered by what happened in Colorado. And it's an issue not just for the nation, it's for the movie theater owners, it's for Hollywood. You know, if you can't go into a movie theater and feel safe, then are you really going to go into a movie theater? And if you're a parent, are you going to send your 12 or 13-year-old? I think these are all the fundamental questions that this raises about the safety of going to see a film.
You know, I mean, obviously, to the best of our knowledge right now, this was clearly a deranged person. It was not part of a, you know, some sort of broad conspiracy. And I don't know if that anything that theater owners can do to protect against a crazy person coming through the doors like that.
I was at a theater where The Dark Knight was having its midnight showings, and a lot of people were dressed up in costume to go into the theater. And for theater owner, it's very hard. You can't prevent people. I guess you could ban them from wearing costumes. You're not going to put metal detectors in a theater. And then it becomes like an airport with TSA guards. So I don't know what theater owners can do. And I have to say, having talked to a couple of theater owners today, I think the ones I talked to were concerned that this was going to diminish movie going, not just for Dark Knight, for a number of films for in the short term. I think it would be a little bit like flying post 9/11. Nobody wanted to get on an airplane unless they had to. And the question is, will this, you know, be a similar situation for movie going? But I do agree, it's going to spark a greater debate, not just about violence in movies, but violence in America. There are already some people, it's like if there'd been armed patrons in the theater, this wouldn't have happened, which is to me preposterous. But again, it's going to be a larger conversation about violence and guns in this nation. It's a conversation we probably need to have.
I do think there will be questions, you know, as much as there are questions about what this says about gun control, there may be questions about the tenor of violence in the movies. And I understand from my colleagues who've seen this movie, which I have not yet, that, you know, it's kind of a bloodless violence, but it's a very dark and violent movie nonetheless. And of course, there have been examples of violence associated with movies in the past, from Boys in the Hood and Colors and going back. A lot of those were, you know, gangster types going to movies and getting into fights outside of or inside of the theater. So if there's going to be a critique, I think it'll be a different sort of critique in which people will talk about the tone of the movie and the violence. And I've even heard people on talk radio are talking about video games and the general violence. So I think that may be a direction in which the conversation tends to go.
No, and it may have some corollary impact on other movies. The trailer for Gangster Squad was taken down. And this is a movie that features, it has a central plot component of a shooting in a movie theater. Whether or not that scene will remain in the movie, which is a couple weeks out, I think is a legitimate question. But already that trailer, which was on Dark Knight, has gone away. So there's going to be a lot of kind of collateral damage, I think, to other movies that may be affected by this shooting.
Moving on to other news, though, in the industry, John, a long-running battle between Viacom, relatively long-running, Viacom and DirecTV. We talked about it last week. DirecTV pulled Viacom's channels like MTV and Nickelodeon off the air in a dispute over how much they would have to pay to carry those programs. And this was a fight that Viacom decided to join at a time when its ratings were slipping, and pulling those channels off of DirecTV seems to only have made the matter significantly worse.
DirecTV has 20 million subscribers, and this was 9 full days where these shows were not available, and it severely damaged Nickelodeon's ratings and benefited the Disney Channel. So there may be some shifts that Viacom is not able to recover from, but the terms look as if they were pretty favorable to Viacom. They were seeking about $1 billion in new fees from DirecTV. It looks like they're going to get about $600 million, according to published reports. A lot of money, and DirecTV is not going to have to carry Epix.
That would be Viacom's premium movie channel, which has not exactly set the world on fire at this point.
Yeah. So it does sound like both sides got a little. I think as a DirecTV subscriber myself who likes to watch The Daily Show, I'm very happy, but it does seem as if this was a reasonable compromise for everybody involved.
Speaking of The Daily Show, of course, Viacom did take a bit of a public relations beating in all of this. And even Viacom's own talent, Jon Stewart, who had been featured in an ad that Viacom ran trying to attack DirecTV for dropping the Viacom channels, Jon Stewart came back from his break last week and schooled Viacom on the hazards of allowing its programming to be off the air for an extended period of time for a big chunk of the audience that has DirecTV. And we'll just play a little clip of Jon Stewart's educational message for Viacom.
None of this matters. None of this is indispensable. Do you understand? With TV, do you remember Oprah? Exactly. She went off the air, and for like 3 days, millions of viewers were like, oh no, what are we going to do? But you know what happened on day 4? They went, who's this Ellen lady?
Apparently Viacom watched that clip.
Maybe they got the message. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn in the Los Angeles Times. Magic Mike, one of the dark horse hits of the summer, was made on a shoestring. The Steven Soderbergh movie, starring Channing Tatum as a stripper, has grossed nearly $100 million, with a budget reported to be around $7 million.
You are the husband that they never had. You are that dreamboat guy that never came along. You are the one-night stand, that free fling that they get to have tonight with you on stage and still go home to their hubby and not get in trouble because you, baby, you made it legal.
Well represented in the Magic Mike audience were women and gay men. The movie's appeal to both groups may seem obvious, especially in retrospect. But still, Warner Brothers had to build awareness. The studio hired the Carpel Group, a firm that specializes in reaching the gay community, and the president of that company, Craig Carpel, is one of our guests today. I should mention that he's also the brother of Ari Carpel, a contributor to the business. Our other guest wasn't the right fit for the Magic Mike marketing campaign. Jonathan Bock's company, Grace Hill Media, reaches out to the Christian community, a large but not always movie-friendly audience. Bock started his company back in 2000 when he was working in the Warner Brothers publicity department and saw an opportunity.
While I was there, we had a couple movies that came out. One was My Dog Skip, and the other one was the Tom Hanks movie, The Green Mile. And I said to my boss at the time, which is a woman named Dawn Tobin, who is the head of publicity, I said, you know, I think people who go to church would really like these movies. You should hire some company that, you know, reaches out to Christian radio stations or pastors, let them see this movie. And she said, great idea. Let's find that company. We'd hire them. And we looked all over the place, and there was nobody doing it at all. And I was telling my wife about that one night, and she said, well, why don't you do it? And so I put together a proposal and handed it over to Dawn and asked her if she would let me leave and hire me back as a consultant. And I think in the total absence of anyone else doing it, they said, okay.
Craig, you started your company in 1997. What was the impetus for your company starting?
It's actually very similar. I was working at a PR agency. I had been there for 6 years. And over the course of the time that I was there, I started doing my own outreach to the gay market on the projects that we were working on there. It was a very general PR firm.
Did you find at the time that there were no specialty outreach for gay, lesbian, et cetera?
I think there were some agencies that were doing that, but not in the way that I was doing it. I was integrating publicity and marketing together, and what that entails is more grassroots outreach. That's street teams, gay pride participation, special event participation and visibility, as well as nightlife events. We're very heavy into the nightlife world since that's a big aspect of reaching the gay community.
Street teams, meaning like people with little hats on and t-shirts?
when I talk about street teams, we
basically... It sounds like one of those flash mobs.
it sort of is. It's a little gay flash mob. But we send them out in, we call them gayborhoods, in the gay neighborhoods in the major markets. And it doesn't necessarily have to be groups of people wearing movie t-shirts and creating attention in any way or by handing things out. It could be more simply hiring a couple of college students to canvas the area and make sure all of the cafes and the salons and clothing stores have postcards and posters, and we'll give away screening passes to the people who work in the stores. We'll give soundtracks out. It's that kind of thing.
Does anybody ask you to do something that you think is just in bad taste?
No.
Hey, John?
We've been pushed to sometimes of, hey, we have this great idea of something that we want to do. And usually it involves doing something at a church on a Sunday morning. Let's paper, you know, everybody and hand out flyers and a lot of stuff. And I'm really protective of, you know, that inside church experience of kind of that sacred hour.
I was just thinking of the marketing opportunities with the altar.
Kind of signage.
Sony brings you. Yeah. So you don't want to do that.
Well, it's not to say that we don't look for ways to be part of that, but we really try to make sure that it's total opt-in, you know, for the pastor.
Well, John, have you ever had a case where there wasn't an obvious Christian angle, but you thought, I can do this anyway?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, I'm definitely nothing, not that obvious.
You know, but you know what it is? It's 2 hours well spent with your kids. You know, my audience is, you could say it's a niche audience, but it's so vast.
Very, very big audience.
I mean, you know, just some stats for you. On any given weekend, 43% of the country goes to church. In any given month, two-thirds of the country shows up to church. So two-thirds of the country is 200 million people who darken the door of a church. That's kind of like a niche like men, you know? I mean, it's such a broad.
It's very broad.
But within that group, because it's so big, you have a really vast view of entertainment and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, the kind of films they like and the kind of films they hate. And so it's very possible for me to work on an R-rated movie like Act of Valor, which would never work for an organization that, you know, does family ministry. On the flip side of that, I can work on an Alvin and the Chipmunks that's just a great movie for you to go see with your kids and have 2 hours, you know, that's not going to be offensive in any way. And that's not going to appeal to another segment that doesn't want to see movies like that. They want to see real hard-edged kind of movies. And then, of course, everything in between.
What about you, Craig? Are you selling Alvin and the Chipmunks to the gay community?
I could.
Could you?
But I feel like it's a very similar situation. I mean, there are a lot of parallels here. We get hired for films that have specific gay content. I mean, we've worked some of the biggest LGBT themed films of the last 10 plus years, like Milk and Brokeback Mountain and The Kids Are All Right and A Single Man, as well as working lots of films that have absolutely no discernible gay content or obvious interest at all,
such as,
for example, The Artist we worked on last year. And it's simply a film that's great, that was looking to build an audience in any way that it could, that made sense. And the gay community was certainly one that would be responsive to it, and it was.
If you're just joining us, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. We're talking about how specialized marketers help studios sell their movies to niche audiences. Craig Karpel's company targets the LGBT community, and Jonathan Bach's firm reaches out to Christians. Bach says sometimes his job isn't so much selling to that audience as preventing a messy public conflict, the type that arose back in 1988 when Universal released Martin Scorsese's controversial film, The Last Temptation of Christ. Some Christians became incensed by that movie because it showed Jesus being tempted by the possibility of marrying Mary Magdalene and living a long life. Though Jesus rejected that temptation in the movie, the controversy raged on.
Yeah, it really ended up being a pox on everybody's house, I think, because obviously the movie didn't perform. The studio looked terrible. I mean, they had 25,000 Christians standing outside their studio begging them not to make that movie. And then it was not good for the Christian community either, because I think a lot of people saw the movie and said, what's the hubbub? And then also the press didn't tend to go and interview the smartest guys in that group. They didn't go and talk to the guy who's the president of Fuller Theological Seminary or the head pastor at Hollywood Presbyterian Church. They ended up seeking out the guy who's dressed in sackcloth and ashes and dragging a cross outside of Universal to get his opinion.
You worked on the Da Vinci Code, which could have been a liability for Sony, because obviously the Da Vinci Code takes some shots at the Catholic Church.
Much to the credit of everybody at Sony and at Imagine, they were quite aware that they could have a challenge on their hands and allowed me to be part of the process kind of very early on. You know, really the goal, as a matter of fact, I said it in the very first meeting over there, was my goal is to keep 30,000 Christians from standing outside this studio. And of course,
a picture for them of the horror.
Well, you know,
wait.
and they were thinking it from their point of view. But, you know, look, as a Christian, I was thinking of it from the Christian point of view as well, which is this would be terrible for my faith as well. This would be, a terrible visual. So the process of doing something about this really came down to a lot of conversations with a lot of Christian leaders where I said to them, if the whole world wants to talk about Jesus, let's be ready to talk about Jesus. They got that. And we created a website called the Da Vinci Dialogue. And in it, we got probably about 30 or 40 Christian leaders to write essays about the Da Vinci Code, different aspects of the Da Vinci Code. And really, they tore it apart.
They were functioning off the book at that point.
Absolutely. They hadn't seen the movie. So instead of it being something that was dangerous, the Christian community really looked at it as a moment to embrace the conversation and set the record straight.
I had forgotten until just this minute that Jesus actually has a child in that movie. That's the premise, right?
He was married to Mary Magdalene.
Yes. And Craig, what about you? Have you played defense?
Well, I think with The Kids Are All Right, there was the potential for that. You're familiar with the story.
Yes.
One of the two lesbian characters in there has an affair
with a man. Oh, a
straight
affair, right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was definitely some concern up front about how the audience would respond to that. And so we were very aware of that going in, and I had invited some people that I consider to be tastemakers and opinion leaders in the lesbian community to see it and to get their informal feedback on it. And it really didn't actually raise a lot of red flags. I think there was a small faction that responded to it online, and they were very vocal about it, as there always is for anything. But it didn't translate into anything larger than that.
That's interesting.
You know, one of the things that I think is a real difference maybe between Craig's work and my work is that Hollywood is a very gay-friendly community. And so I don't think he's getting things that are brought to him far down the pipeline that would potentially be offensive to the gay community. Hollywood is generally a secular community. And so there's sometimes a bit of disconnect between, you know, what's going to work in the heartland and what will work in the, in Century City.
But I also think there's GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, serves a big purpose. And I think a lot of scripts get sent to them to be vetted very early.
I mean, when you see a film like I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, just to, you know, give you an example of a film that was, you know, had these kind of issues swirling around it, is that a film you could market to a gay audience?
I don't think that was really meant for a gay audience. So, no.
Uh-huh. I mean, certain films you're like, these are not for my people. I mean,
right.
The gay audience is obviously diverse, so I don't know how
yes,
we even
we
define.
Yes, we go see everything.
Yeah.
We all go see The Amazing Spider-Man and Skyfall and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Total Recall. I mean, we go to movies just like everybody else does, and we don't just come out every 5 years for Brokeback Mountain.
Coming up after a short break, using Hollywood movies as the basis for Sunday morning sermons. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Hi, this is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Thanks so much for listening. Our show costs money to make, and we're dependent on listeners like you to make it. KCRW is a nonprofit, listener-supported public radio station. Go to kcrw.com/join.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. In this crowded and fragmented media landscape, studios are looking for ways to break through the clutter and reach specific segments of the audience. They hire specialized marketing firms to craft targeted campaigns, such as the Carpel Group, which specializes in reaching the gay community. Today, we're talking to Craig Carpel of that firm and Jonathan Bach, whose company, Grace Hill Media, focuses on Christian audiences. Bach worked with much success on the 2009 film The Blind Side, which grossed more than $300 million worldwide. Thanks in part to Bach's marketing, the Christian community turned out in full force for the film. Bach is often brought in on projects as early as the script phase to guide studios on appealing to or avoiding problems with the vast Christian audience.
It's constantly amazing to me how many times I redline in scripts like Jesus Christ and God damn it
used as expletives. Mm-hmm.
And how many times people are like, really? They don't like that? They don't. They find that offensive? Every time they say that, I'm like, not I'm going to be in business for another 3 years. They still haven't figured it out.
And do they then take it out?
It depends. Again, it's, you know, there's a give and take with all that, but lots of times they do remove that kind of stuff.
Why don't we talk about a specific case study, Magic Mike? Craig, how did you come to be hired for that film?
I had known about it very, very early on, and I was certainly really interested in it. I think it sounded like a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and I thought the cast was amazing and great for what we do. So I had brought it up last year with the studio and just express my interest. And then they came back to me when they were putting together the full marketing campaign.
What kind of thing do you get brought in to do on that?
We had a lot of digital assets to work with. We had some great pictures that were being unveiled. We had great magazine covers like Entertainment Weekly. We had clips and trailers and poster art. And what we did was, as they were coming available, each of those things, we worked very hard to directly feed it to gay blogs to make sure that they covered it as well. And they weren't just picking it up secondhand from elsewhere and making sure that things went viral as much as possible on Facebook and Twitter. Also, we did a lot of nightlife events. I mean, we probably did 25 or 30 plus markets. We did the biggest club or bar in every one of those markets. We did a Magic Mike night where we did promo item giveaways and screening pass giveaways. And we also did boys' night out screenings in select markets, which reflected some of the girls' night out screenings that they were doing on a wider basis.
Magic Mike doesn't have a gay storyline, but obviously it has Channing Tatum in various stages of undress. So maybe it wasn't that easy and obvious. But, I mean, did you encourage Warner Bros.? Did they get that right away?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just a really fun movie with a bunch of very hot guys who are also hot actors at this moment stripping. And it's really fun. And it's a good story. And we knew that this audience would respond to it really well. I mean, certainly it had very, very wide appeal, the film. Obviously, it did incredibly well, and an enormous amount of women turned out for it. But our work was making sure that the gay community turned out as well.
Was it almost too easy? Can you give me an example of something that was harder? Because
I wouldn't say anything is ever too easy. I mean, some things we don't have to push as hard to get people to write about them, mm-hmm. because people are very interested.
Right.
People were very excited about it, and it's great when we can work on a project that people just respond to right away, and they get really worked up. I mean, we work a lot in music as well, and it's sort of the equivalent of when we work on a Madonna album.
Now, John, I was going to ask you about The Blind Side, and I'm starting to wonder if that one was too easy.
Before we go there, I would just like to say that the Bible study guide that we created for Magic Mike was some of the best work we have ever done.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you guys whether there is a world where, you know, the movies overlap, and I guess maybe it's Alvin and the Chipmunks. I don't know. Well, so is Blind Side too easy, or is it, was that one not so obvious as it seems in retrospect?
Well, I would say this, that for the most part, no movie is easy for me with my audience, because there's just a natural, skepticism is a perfect word for it, of almost all things Hollywood. And so we get a lot of our folks who, you know, cross their arms and have the attitude of prove to me that I'm not going to be offended by this.
So tell us about The Blind Side.
The specialty kind of stuff that we needed to do was, this was going to be a movie, I really felt, that was going to work from 8 to 80. The basic premise of the movie being this Christian family who has to decide to, like, go out of their way to help this kid, and that it has, you know, tremendous benefits not only to him but to their family as well, was going to play so well that we wanted to screen it like crazy. And Warner Brothers did too, rightly so. They felt like the same thing. So we ended up doing, I think, several hundred screenings for pastors and ministry professionals, maybe that's a better way to put that, so that they could start spreading the word. And then we created resources for these pastors to make their job easy. I mean, look, the job of a pastor is, you know, they're basically the CEO of a small company. They go through the week doing the same things that a lot of us do with our companies, having staff meetings and dealing with issues of their building and HR stuff and things like that. And then during the weekend, they have to deliver a pitch-perfect 20-minute speech a couple times. So, you know, the job of writing that for them takes a lot of hours, 10 hours, 12 hours usually to write sermons. So sometimes when we're working on films, what we like to do is take a little of that work out for them. So we will create a kind of a detailed outline and
how you can preach from this movie.
Well, yeah, but we won't do it ourselves. I mean, we work with pastors that are out there. I don't ever want a movie to be like, here's your sermon brought to you by Warner Brothers.
But so, do you have pastors working on your staff?
Not on our staff, but they either volunteer and do it with us, or sometimes we pay them to create these kind of outlines so that it's coming from someone who understands the mindset of a pastor, and so that it's effective to them. And then we'll pull clips from the movie, and certainly in the case of The Blind Side, we pulled a lot of clips. The world of churches has really changed in the last 10 or 15 years. They've moved from kind of very traditional forms of worship, a choir, an organ, and they all have put in, not all, but a big chunk of them have put in, you know, praise bands, which are basically, you know, contemporary Christian rock bands. And since you're not singing out of the hymn book anymore, you need a screen to put up these, you know, contemporary lyrics. And so all these churches have put in fantastic screens. If you've just dropped $40,000 on a screen, you want to use it for more than just some song lyrics. And so the world has evolved now where pastors are using clips from movies as sermon illustrations. So instead of telling you a story out of their life, you know, the other day I was in an airport and a woman said to me, Pastor,
yes.
You know, instead of telling you something like that, they'll use clips from films to
Sandra Bullock, boom.
Yeah, there you go. We had 21,000 different churches use clips from the movie in their sermons.
Wow. That's a big number.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, one, I like it for the pastors because it makes them feel very relevant to, like, something that's literally coming out next week in a theater. But then on the flip side, as a movie marketer, I like that too because it's, well, it's a tacit endorsement by the pastor saying, this is a great movie and you should go see it.
Absolutely. When you listen to this, Craig, do you sort of feel like, geez, you know, I wish I had churches with screens on them?
Right. You know, our outreach is just different. You know, we deal with a different kind of audience. There's different ways to reach them. You know, I think what we do is much more, quote unquote, lifestyle-y. And I use that term just meaning we try to get to our audience through so many different ways. We want them to read about it on a blog that they read a lot. We want them to see it in their local newspaper. We want them to see postcards on the street. We want them to see it at a nightclub that they go to. We want them to hear about it through their friends. It's very much oriented towards lifestyle in that way.
Craig Karpel is the owner and president of the Karpel Group, a marketing agency specializing in outreach to the LGBT community, and he's also the brother of our contributor on The Business, Ari Karpel. Jonathan Bach is the founder and president of Grace Hill Media, a faith-based marketing firm. Thank you guys both so much.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks so much.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.